Vidvan My dear King, any person who works according to the directions of the Vedic scriptures does not become involved in fruitive activity. Therefore, just as the government may issue trade licenses in order for its citizens to act in a certain way, the Vedas contain injunctions that restrain and regulate all our fruitive activities. All living entities have come into this material world to enjoy themselves. Consequently, the Vedas are given to regulate sense enjoyment. One who enjoys the senses under the Vedic regulator principle does not become entangled in the actions and reactions of his activities. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, yajna-karmana, one should act only for the performance of yajna to satisfy Lord Vishnu, anyatra lokayam karma bandhanam. Otherwise, any action will produce the reaction by which a living entity will be bound. A human being is especially meant to attain liberation from the bondage of birth, death, old age, and disease. He is therefore directed by the Vedic regulator principle to work in such a way that he may fulfill his desires for sense gratification and at the same time gradually become freed from material bondage. Action according to such principles is called knowledge. Indeed, the word Veda means knowledge. The words Gyane and Asalapyate indicate that by following the Vedic principles, one does not become involved in the actions or reactions of his fruitive activities. Everyone is therefore advised to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions. Responsibly, when a person within a state acts according to the laws and licenses of the government, he does not become involved in criminal activities. Man-made laws, however, are also defective because they are made by men who are prone to committing mistakes, being illusion, cheating, and having imperfect senses. The Vedic instructions are different because they do not have these four defects. Vedic instructions are not subject to mistakes. The knowledge of the Vedas is knowledge received directly from God, and there is constantly no question of illusion, cheating, mistakes, or imperfect senses. All Vedic knowledge is perfect because it is received directly from God by the Paramparas with succession. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Tena Brahma Vrda Ya Adikavaye, the original creator of this universe known as Adikavya or Lord Brahma, was instructed by Krishna through the heart. After receiving these Vedic instructions from the Lord Krishna himself, Brahma distributed the knowledge by the Paramparas to Narada, and Narada in turn distributed the knowledge to Vyasa. In this way, the Vedic knowledge is perfect. If we act according to Vedic knowledge, there is no question of being involved in sinful activities. Narada Muni continued to speak to King Prashnamarishat. My dear King, any person who works according to the directions of the Vedic scripture does not become involved in fruit of activities. So, previous verses were about the king hunting, King Paranjana going out hunting. And, of course, the hunting was for doing sacrifices. King Paranjana Varishat was doing sacrifices, and therefore he had to kill animals. So, in one sense, he was regulating his activities because of sacrifice. He just didn't kill animals and eat them. He did sacrifices. So he was regulated. And here Narada Muni is saying, one who works according to the Vedas does not become involved in karma. But there is a little restriction here. We know that those who do karma yoga, sacrifices, they're not free from karma. They minimize the bad karmas and they increase the good karmas, and then they can enjoy the material world. But they never get liberation by that. So they're never free of karma as such. So one cannot actually be uncontaminated by this following Vedic regulations in terms of karma yoga. It does mention, however, here that in Jnanena, one is not bound by karma through knowledge. So, of course, knowledge in the process refers to Jnana Yoga. And we know that Jnana Yoga will destroy bondage, and you can get liberation. So, it is not all Vedic regulations which can destroy the karma. The Karma Yoga section cannot do that. Varnashram in general does not do that. Artha Dharma Kama does not do that. When we go for moksha, yes. But the process to follow then is Jnana Yoga or Astanga Yoga. So, therefore, not all the Vedic regulations will destroy karma, but they will help minimize sinful activities. And then one can live happily in the material world. When we come to Jnana, however, and yoga, and then their aim is to destroy karma. So those regulations in the Vedas which talk about that, and generally in the Jnana Khanda, we have Jnana praise as the means of destroying bondage in the material world and getting liberation. However, according to the Bhagavatam and our Acharyas, even that is not an absolute statement, because Jnana and Yoga are actually still within the gunas. So they cannot actually destroy the gunas. So you cannot get liberation simply by Jnana or Yoga. They can only get you to the top of Sattva Guna. So how does the Jnani or the Yogi get liberation? Only by something which is beyond the gunas. Ultimately, the only thing beyond the gunas is the Supreme Lord. But Krishna says in Bhagavatam, I'm not attracted to Jnana and Yoga and Sankhya, etc. So we cannot really get the mercy of the Lord by these processes. But if we don't get the mercy of the Lord, we cannot get liberation. Therefore, the point is made that ultimately the only way in which one can really destroy karma and get liberation is bhakti. Not even Jnana and Yoga. They cannot free you from karma completely. So therefore, bhakti will do that. So therefore, in all the processes, Jnana and Yoga and karma, bhakti is also prescribed to some degree. So this is the process that actually will destroy the karmas and give you liberation. So ultimately, therefore, the Vedic injunction for karma, Jnana, and Yoga is actually incomplete. But, of course, the Vedic injunctions also have bhakti. So that is the process glorified in the Bhagavatam. In Karmakanda, the karma process is glorified as free, even though it keeps you in the material world. So it doesn't completely destroy karma. In the Jnanakanda section, Jnana is praised to give you liberation. But when we examine that, it cannot give liberation unless there is some bhakti also. So if we do bhakti without karma and Jnana, we could get liberation, but that's not the goal. We get more than that. We get eternal service of the Lord. So that is the glory of bhakti. It's not a process to strive to get liberation. It's a process to strive to please the Lord, to serve the Lord, that's all. And through that one gets the mercy of the Lord, and one destroys all karma, one also gets liberation, or whatever. So, ultimately, this is the process glorified in the Bhagavatam. Of course, here Narada Muni is speaking non-absolutely, he is speaking in terms of teaching. So just as Krishna teaches Arjuna in the second chapter, he teaches jnana and karma. But that's also not absolute in the Bhagavad Gita, because ultimately this is dubhakti. So here also Narada Muni is teaching about karma and jnana and praising it as getting you out of the material world and destroying your bondage. When actually, no. We shouldn't take these as absolute statements. Huh? So the only process that works is ultimately bhakti yoga. We should take that as the real conclusion. Huh? So we should not get confused when Narada Muni is glorifying karma and regulative principles and all of this. Certainly, these things are helpful, but ultimately, in themselves, they cannot get you free from the bondage of the material world. You'll still be in the material world. So the only process that gets you out of the material world is the process of bhakti. The Vedic literatures have all of these processes in them. And we may think, well, because it's in the scriptures, therefore we should do it. But, of course, if all these processes are in them, are we going to do all of them together? That would be impossible. So therefore, we can only do one at a time. So the normal of the process is to do it by qualification. If you qualify for karma, do the karma. If you qualify for jnana, do the jnana. If you qualify for bhakti, do the bhakti. That's the normal process. But that's also condemned in Bhagavatam. Narada Muni condemns that in the first canto, when he says, this process of catering to people in lower qualifications is not going to work in Kali Yuga. Because if you cater to the people doing karma yoga, they will never get beyond that and will simply get stuck in the material world. They'll get attached to the results and they will stick there and they won't go any further. So, therefore, they never go beyond bondage in the material world. They never get out of bondage. So therefore he says, you just recommend bhakti yoga. So though these other processes are mentioned in the Vedic literatures and in Bhagavad Gita and in Bhagavatam, ultimately we have to consider it all maya. It is not the final process, and the final process is bhakti. And therefore at the beginning of Bhagavatam it says dharma, kaitava dharma, cheating dharma is all completely rejected as a process. So even though we find statements like this, or whole sections on jnana, or varnashram, etc., ultimately, Bhagavatam is rejecting it, because that's the first statement of the Bhagavatam. This word rejects all the cheating dharmas. What does it accept? Ultimately, it accepts bhakti. That's the process. So that's the beginning of the Bhagavatam. And of course, again, at the end of the Bhagavatam, again, it glorifies the process of chanting the name of the Lord as the process to follow. So we have to take that into consideration when we read all the stuff, all the verses in the middle. Though they may glorify karma, jnana, yoga, or whatever, still, ultimately, they're rejected. So even though Narada Muni is speaking here, or Krishna will speak in to Uddhava, or other sages will speak in other places still, and they will glorify these processes, we cannot take them as supreme processes. They're in the Vedas, so they get their glorification, but ultimately the process to follow is bhakti, that's all.
Why is it since the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita is like that, this script is only for bhakti, why then other processes are actually mentioned in the first place?
Well, one is to attract people who are attracted to other processes, and by reading those they gradually get involved in this, and then they may read about Krishna in the process of reading about these things. That's one reason. Another is to bewilder people. So those people who are not really qualified for bhakti will get bewildered by everything else in the Bhagavatam. And there are some deliberate statements in the Bhagavatam, especially about jnana, to bewilder those who are impersonalists, because it praises jnana in the 11th canto as absolute, etc. 12th canto also, that even Sukadeva tells Parikshit, now it's time to merge into Brahman. So Huh? And these are purposely put there to fool impersonals, so that the real truth is hidden from them. The other thing, of course, is that because it is a Purana, it deals with all subjects. And since the Vedic literature has all these processes, it does not neglect to mention them, but they have to be understood in the proper place.
Can we also say that because these processes are mentioned and rejected by Shri Prabhupada, so mention of these yoga systems is actually glorification of Bhakti?
Well, that's how they're presented in here. All of the different topics of the Bhagavatam, like Sarga and Visarga and Sthana, etc., Poshana, 10 topics are there. The 10th topic is Asraya, that is Krishna. He is the supreme shelter of all the other topics. So we have to study them only in relation to Krishna, that whatever powers they have is actually the Shakti of Krishna, and they're related to Him. All dharmas. Everything is in bhakti. Because Narada Muni rejects everything except bhakti at the end of the first canto when he speaks to Vyasadeva. He says, you've written the Puranas for people in Tamagun, Rajagun, and Sattvagun, and telling them to worship different devatas. No, this is all not going to work in Kali Yuga. You just say bhakti yoga. Worship Krishna, hear about Krishna, that's all. No other process. So therefore everything else is called cheating karma. Devotees, they give mercy to them. That's the only process, actually.
While locating schools, the cheating religion also has been propagated through Vedas. But what is the necessity that Lord Himself is giving one side cheating religion?
Well, for instance, He gives Buddhism as Buddha. Or He preaches Mayavada philosophy of Shankaracharya to Shiva, as arranged by the Lord also. Those are particular processes at certain times for the purposes of the Lord. Just like the Supreme Lord comes and kills all the demons and arranges the battle for Kshetra to kill all the demons, you know. The Lord has different purposes and different pastimes at certain times. And so when it's time to kill demons, then He'll kill demons. When it's time to take people into Buddhism, He'll take them into Buddhism away from karmakanda, or corruption of karmakanda. Or when they're too much into Buddhism, then He'll put them into Mayavada philosophy, through Shankaracharya, etc. So at certain times He'll arrange certain things which may not be directly bhakti also. Those aren't the arrangement. Those aren't the arrangement of the Lord. Where Buddhism was the arrangement of the Lord. This is not. These things, modern things, are not arrangements of the Lord. Those are just people's foolishness.
Now, somebody who took birth during the time of Buddha and believed in the teachings of Buddha and died believing in the teachings of Buddha, then what happens?
No, because it's a form of the Lord, Shaktivesh Avatar, they get some advantage.
ரெண்டு பிரபுக்கு ரெண்டு பீஸ் பண்ணுறேன்.